The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
This guy, he's a MAGA guy all the way.
Okay, so for his first order, yup.
Well, that's a good looking group. Hello, everybody. This is not a normal situation, is it, huh? How are you? What a good looking family. How did you produce those good looking kids? Oh, they look like the wife. They look like the wife. How are you? Nice to see you. That's great. Thank you, man.
Appreciate all.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And there'll be no charge. Trump is paying for it. Is that okay?
2024.
Oh, you're going to some extra stuff.
Oh, okay.
This is all on Trump.
Oh, all on Trump.
I'm allowed to do that, right?
Yes.
Let's check and make sure it's everything you said it would be.
It better be. It's going to be the best you ever. I made it myself.
You're the best. Make America.
That's
great.
The order. Thank you, man. Thank you. Have a good time. That's great, isn't it?
Okay.
How cute is it?
R.
If you're turning the page, you've been in office for 3.5 years.
And Donald Trump has been running for office.
But you've been the person holding the office.
Come on. You and I both know what I'm talking about.
I actually don't. What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is that over the last decade, people have become. But listen.
Do you believe that Donald Trump has somehow become less popular over time? Let me change your mind about that. In fact, he is more popular at this point in the campaign than he was at this point in the 2020 campaign or the 2016 campaign. Look, he's still underwater, right, with a negative 9-point net favorability rating. But that is higher than he was in 2020 at minus 12 points when he nearly won. And it is way higher than the minus 27 net favorability back in 2016 when he did win. So I think there's this real question in Kamala Harris's mind, in the campaign's mind, why is Trump more popular now than he was at this point in 2020 and 2016?
The bad stretch the Democrats are in just got worse. Betting markets have Trump nearly up 16. It's his biggest lead since Kamala got into the race. He's peaking at just the right time. But some Democrats are in denial.
I refuse to believe that we're going to lose. I just don't have that thought anymore. But we have got to tell people what exactly is at risk here.
Carville thinks Trump's riskier than what we have right now. Wars, open borders, inflation. His first term experienced none of this.
Where am I most likely going to get a tax policy I like? An immigration policy I like? A foreign policy I like? Where am I most likely to get a gun policy I like? A climate change policy I like? A woke policy I like, that I agree with? Where am I most likely to get that? And I can check those boxes very clearly, very quickly on these two candidates. So I'm going to tell you, I'm voting for Donald Trump, not because I'm voting for Donald Trump.
Are we going here?
That's okay. But I check those boxes, and more of those are on that side than on the other side.
Who's voting for Kamala Harris here? Absolutely no.
No. No. Not possible.
There's nothing she can do or say for us to change our mind.
Shout your own name for a minute. That's what I'm talking about, because it's about you. It's about your family. It's about you. That's what I'm talking about.
Do you think some of the resistance of some men, black and white, is misogynist?
I think that you are absolutely right, that there is this narrative about what kind of support we are receiving from black men that is just not panning out.
And I should note, we did not find a single person who audibly would tell us that they voted for Kamala Harris. These were Trump supporters getting out to vote early in the all-important Mojave County ticket. That not only Republicans are watching come to the polls, but also Democrats have a close eye, understanding that they need to really win the Maricopa County area to make up for any potential juicing of turnout here among the MAGA faithful.
We are on the home stretch. Two more weeks from tomorrow. And we've got, what, the most contentious presidential election in American history? A lot's happened since I spoke to you last in full length. I guess that would be last Wednesday's program. So we have a lot to get to on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at trumpetdaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to rumble.com/trumpetdaily. So we're broadcasting today, obviously, from a hotel room. We're in Auburn, New York. So Donald Trump says New York's in play. So we'll see what happens in a couple of weeks. But over the weekend, of course, he spent a lot of his time in Pennsylvania. And I don't know if he recorded the segment for Howie Kurtz's show on Fox News. That played Sunday morning. Then he's off to McDonald's in Philadelphia. Then he does a town hall in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And then he goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers game last night. And we'll show you some footage of that here in just a second. But this man is full of energy. Never mind what the regime media says. He is sprinting to the finish line. And the people love it. The people love it. We've got, due to the McDonald's, some would say it was a stunt. He's just making a, you know, setting it full of MAGA people, closing down the restaurant and whatever. But look at the people that line the streets. And then he's cooking the fries. And then he's helping out at the drive-thru window, leading to this, some would say, iconic photo. Another one that you can add to a long list of photos, Trump waving outside the drive-thru window. Now, just think about, again, the media, they lined up. They thought they had another opportunity to trip him up, to make him look like a fool, to give him a Michael Dukakis moment. I forget what year that was, but when he had the big helmet on, he looked foolish. They thought, surely we'll be able to take advantage of this and make Donald Trump look like the fool that he is. Instead, Donald Trump breaks the internet. It was unbelievable to watch. Everybody in America laughing. This is hilarious, so many people said on social media. And then he's there and you see how he interacts with the McDonald's staff. You see, whether they're MAGA supporters or not, they probably were. But look at the people in the cars just talking with him back and forth, how much they love and appreciate him. And then again, look at the people lining the streets. This is a bit more from yesterday's shift at McDonald's, clip 7.
Mr. President, you actually have worked at McDonald's now versus...
Now I have worked at McDonald's. I've now worked for 15 minutes more than Kamala.
Are you going to put this on your resume?
I never worked here.
Why would she lie about something like that? Will it be put on your resume?
I worked at McDonald's.
Why would she lie about that?
Because she's lying, Kamala, that's why.
Notice how he... I mean, this is a man who's a master at playing the media and driving the narrative. We talk so much on this show about narratives, false narratives usually. But look at Donald Trump taking it to the regime media, not just Kamala, but the regime media saying, look, there's no evidence, and they love that term, don't they? No evidence? There's no evidence that she's ever worked at McDonald's. This was in the New York Times this morning. Kamala Harris and McDonald's, a college job and a Trump attack. And notice what they write underneath the headline. Donald Trump has claimed, without evidence, that Ms. Harris never worked at the fast food chain. Her campaign and a friend say that she did. Well, a friend says that she worked at McDonald's. So they say Donald Trump has no evidence. In fact, Kamala Harris has no evidence. So there he is. I've worked here 15 minutes. That's 15 more minutes than Kamala ever did. If Kamala worked there, let's just forget about it for a moment. Why would you lie about something so insignificant, so inconsequential? A fast food job. You either did or you didn't. She says she did. People say, well, where's the evidence? She doesn't have it. McDonald's doesn't have it. So Donald Trump calls her out. And then he goes to McDonald's. The moment that he's supposed to flop on the world stage, and it turns out to be a ratings boom, like everything that this man seems to do. Pretty amazing. It's amazing to watch. I was in the car driving up here to Auburn yesterday as we viewed some of this footage in the car, and it's hilarious. Only Donald Trump could pull this off. And he did it in Philadelphia. These are deep, dark, blue cities. Philadelphia for McDonald's, and then Pittsburgh for the football game. I mean, these are where the cheating machines are. This is how he lost the election 4 years ago, because of these Democrat strongholds. Now you've got thousands of people lining the streets in Philadelphia. It wasn't that long ago, remember, when people were afraid to show public support for Donald Trump. Certainly they were afraid to do so in deep, dark blue areas. Not so yesterday. You know, you saw Dave Ramsey there. He's the financial guru. He's just coming out and saying it. Remember, he wanted to get an interview with both Donald Trump and Kamala. Trump took him up on it, and Kamala didn't. And then Kamala's people say, what? Trump's exhausted. Trump's not doing interviews. Trump, look at his face. Listen to his rallies. No. That I was telling Sam earlier today. This is my new favorite hot take from the radical left. That Trump is exhausted. He's tired. He's losing it. It reminded me of when they said, after one of those lawsuits where he supposedly is going to lose hundreds of millions of dollars, he's broke. He's broke. His empire is gone. He has no money. And there he is yesterday paying for everyone's meal at McDonald's. He's not exhausted. And he said as much last week when he got off the plane. This is ridiculous. She's the one that's avoiding interviews. Why didn't she go on Dave Ramsey? They go on and on about 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes has been humiliated. 60 Minutes had to come out with a statement over the weekend about manipulating that footage with Kamala's interview just to try to make it look like a coherent answer. They're still getting flack for it. And now they're having to come out, CBS, and say Donald Trump says this and we're very professional and we do edit here and there, but it's always honest. Trump called them out again. Here's another example where he's driving the narrative, where he's forcing the regime media to address topics that they would rather avoid, just brush aside and move on. And Donald Trump won't let them do that. Listen again to, or view it, watch this, as Donald Trump takes to the fry machine at this McDonald's in Philadelphia, clip 8.
Touched by a human hand, nice and clean. My hands are nice and clean. This guy's a good instructor.
I appreciate it.
Wow. I'm going to give a really big one so that they're just pouring out of it. How good is that, Margo? Here, Margo, have them.
We're not here to promote fast food, but it does make you want to go out and get a carton of fries at McDonald's. This is a statement from the owner of this, I guess it's Feasterville, Pennsylvania, suburb of Philadelphia. And this McDonald's owner says, as a small independent business owner, it is a fundamental value of my organization that we proudly open our doors to everyone who visits the Feasterville community. It says, that's why I accepted former President Trump's request to observe the transformative working experience that 1 in 8 Americans have had a job at McDonald's. So in addition to making the media address the Kamala lie, Trump's also going and rubbing shoulders with the McDonald's staff, which 1 in 8 Americans can identify with. That's how many people have worked there. That's incredible. Call it a publicity stunt, if you will. But imagine if Kamala went to Mobile, Alabama, and visited a McDonald's because she's worked there before, and she goes in and she starts cooking the fry. How do you think that would come? Leave that aside. How many people would line the streets in Alabama to see Kamala Harris work the drive-thru? Well, I think you know the answer to that. This is an incredible turn of events. And yes, it's happened over the course of 4 years, but who could have imagined this less than 4 years ago when he's blotted out of social media? He's made a pariah by the regime media. The regime says he's going away. He's never coming back. He can never recover from this. And look at where we are now. You saw in that cold open. I mean, this has been this past week, over the past 7 days, it's been a disaster for Kamala Harris and her campaign, starting with the interview with Bret Baier, just a train wreck. And then the next night, Trump goes to the Al Smith affair and he's cracking jokes all night and people are laughing in this left-wing audience. They think he's hilarious. Kamala doesn't show up. The first Democrat not to show up for this fundraiser since Walter Mondale in 1984. He lost in a landslide to Reagan that year. Why? If Trump's the one avoiding interviews, why didn't Kamala show up to the Al Smith affair? Why didn't she sit down with Dave Ramsey? It's exactly, when they accuse Trump of something, it's exactly the opposite. So think about the regime as they say, Trump is exhausted. Who really is exhausted? Who's getting worn down? What a spectacular backfire this is. And really, you can go all the way back to when they stole it in 2020, because before that actual election, it was the dear leader, Barack Obama, who pretty much installed Kamala Harris as VP. In fact, he wanted her to be president then. That was who Barack Obama handpicked. But she was so unpopular, she dropped out before they even got to Iowa. So Obama's moving all the chess pieces, and he says, well, let's go with the old man then, Joe Biden. And then he told Joe, make sure that you take Kamala then as your VP. And then we don't know exactly what happened this past summer, if it was of Joe's doing or Barack Obama's or Kamala's people, but I'm sure there was some infighting of some kind. In any event, Kamala stepped in there, and what a disaster that has proven to be. And it's almost laugh out loud hilarious when you see how desperate the regime media has been to prop her up. The joy, the vibe. Who has the joy and the vibes? Look at that scene in McDonald's yesterday. I mean, the regime media is being exposed. A bunch of liars, just like CBS, 60 Minutes. Just manipulate it, cut and paste, put the answer for this question over here into this answer here, and hopefully it will make sense. It's not working. It's not working. Someone asked him outside the drive-thru yesterday about Kamala Harris's birthday. I guess that was yesterday. Listen to this, clip 9.
Thank you.
No, it is her birthday. It is true, right? Happy birthday, Kamala. Happy birthday. See you later. Bye.
Who has the joy and the vibes? We heard coming out of the Democrat National Convention, oh, this place, it's just full of joy. There's so many good vibes. There weren't many good vibes in that sit down with Bret Baier last week. And if truth be told, it wasn't even that difficult of an interview. You look at the headlines from the regime media, they're saying what started as an interview turned into a debate. Oh, okay, well, Trump's people are saying, welcome to the club. But Bret Baier, that was not a difficult interview. That was just a reporter asking direct questions. Okay, that's what reporters are supposed to do. And then he had the nerve to actually ask a couple of follow-up questions, something the regime media won't do when it's the people they're trying to prop up. Donald Trump goes to those debates and he has to debate three people, Kamala or Joe Biden, and then two of the reporters as well. So you have the disaster with Fox News. Again, the no-show at the fundraiser the next day. It's a pretty unbelievable sequence of events. I mean, God is really exposing the radical left. And he's also giving some support and help to Donald Trump. Clearly, now you know from everything we've said for the last many years, all of this is laid out in such vivid detail, prophetic detail, in America Under Attack. If you don't have a copy of that, we offer it without cost or obligation. A 200-page hardcover, beautiful book that we offer freely. Just call our operators today and request your free copy of America Under Attack, or just go to the website, thetrumpet.com. Let's play this, as I said earlier, my new favorite hot take from the regime media, the one that Donald Trump is exhausted. Clip two.
A Trump advisor told producers that Trump was exhausted and refusing interviews.
He would be the oldest president ever inaugurated if he wins in November.
He will not agree to a second presidential debate.
The former president was swaying and asked to play songs for about 40 minutes.
Donald Trump's public appearances have deteriorated.
The stomach is speaking.
Many aspirations.
Just like putting a million Rambos to good old Sylvester Stallone as my friend.
There is no way that this man who can't make it through an entire speech, who keeps canceling things, is going to be the person that does four more years.
Now just think about yesterday. I mean, they can package anything together and try to make him look bad. The other side could do just the same with Kamala. But just think about yesterday as one example. Howie Kurtz, 11 a.m. Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, Philadelphia, the Philadelphia McDonald's. Late Sunday afternoon, early evening, he's at the town hall in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And then last night, he goes to the Steelers game in Pittsburgh. These are not signs of total exhaustion. These are signs of someone who's in command. He knows he's running away with it. And he is sprinting. So when the regime comes up with all of these false narratives, they're the ones that look foolish. Listen to Peter Baker. I think he's with the New York Times. Clip three.
He's not like any politician we've seen at his level before, but I do think that we have seen a change in the last 8 years. We've done a study of his speeches, his rally speeches, going back to 2015, 2016, when he was first running. And it clearly they have taken a turn. He is more incoherent. He uses more all or nothing language, which a lot of experts say is a sign of aging. He uses more negative terms to positive terms than he used to, also seen as a sign of advancing age. He uses more profanity, which some people would say fits the term disinhibition, when you stop feeling nearly so inhibited. His speeches are about twice as long now as they were 8 years ago, less disciplined. And he's obviously not following the script. He rarely follows the script, but he's really off the script a lot these days with talk about sharks versus electric boats and making things up, like there are too many things to even name as examples. So I do think that there are questions about his age. They had not been focused on as strongly while Biden was still in the race, because Biden's age questions were even more pronounced in a public and physical way. Trump obviously doesn't present the same way as Biden, but I do think he fell asleep at his trial. He doesn't do, about a quarter as many rallies he does now compared to 8 years ago. And as that quote from that article showed, there are some people who say he's too exhausted to do more than his schedule already has.
It's not working. It's just not working. Look at the crowds lining the streets in that little town or that suburb of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. They can go on and on as long as they want. He's got the energy. It's the Kamala campaign that's lost all of its momentum. And you look at the numbers. I saw a graphic just the other day, going back to, I guess, early September through October. And now here we are. It isn't working as much as they want it to work. It's wishful thinking. This is from the New York Times today. 4 weeks, or sorry, four of Trump's most meandering remarks this week. And then the article talks about how Trump says he's out there, you know, kind of weaving all of these themes together. And he does it on purpose. The New York Times says, no, no, that's dangerous. The same regime media that for 3.5 years, they couldn't care less about a meandering, you know, 81-year-old falling asleep, doing all the things that they're saying Trump is doing now. Listen to Jennifer Rubin, the Rhino, clip 4.
She is actually running clips of him at her rallies, something I have never seen a presidential candidate do. And that's because the reality of Donald Trump is very disturbing. And unfortunately, he's been sanitized. He's been sane washed, which is now an expression. I don't think the average person truly appreciates how unraveled, how insane, how tired he is. And she's willing to show it and take time out of her own rally. And she is now making this issue. I think it is beginning to finally break through in the mainstream media because it's unavoidable.
Again, the New York Times this morning, for Trump, a lifetime of scandals heads toward a moment of judgment. A lifetime of scandals. No, actually, you all loved him before he came down the escalator just 9 years ago. Now it's a lifetime of scandals. In fact, his lifetime, you know, actually building up a profitable business, then being a TV celebrity, knowing a thing or two about how to handle the media, it's all coming into play now. It's all actually helping him, his lifetime. Notice they're trying everything they've already tried. Here comes the lawfare again. The Times says here, no major party presidential candidate, much less president in American history, has been accused of wrongdoing so many times. That's right. The radical left has accused him of wrongdoing, but nothing sticks. Nothing sticks. He's the comeback kid. Listen to Trump. This is from over the weekend as well. Clip 5.
Are you prepared to say now that you will not use law enforcement to punish or prosecute your political opponents?
Excuse me. That's what they're using on me.
Okay, so you're convinced that they started
it. Before you start this.
Yeah, I got it.
Howie, that's what they're using on me. I've got DAs. I've got everybody. They look at me. There's never been anything like this. The biggest case was the one down in Florida, and I beat it 100%. I won the case. Because we had, a brilliant judge and a judge that moved rather rapidly, and I won the case. By the way, Biden had almost the same case, but he didn't have the Presidential Records Act because he wasn't the president, just to finish. And he got off on the basis that he's incompetent, essentially that he's incompetent. And it was a strange ruling because they said, number one, he's incompetent, so he's not going to be. But the prosecutor actually said he's guilty, but he's incompetent. But they didn't say he couldn't be president anymore. That was his bigger problem for not being president. How can you not represent yourself in court because you're incompetent? But you're allowed to represent the United States of America. The whole thing is crazy. But no, they have weaponized government against me.
But and are you willing to use the same tactics?
No, I don't want to do that because that's a bad thing for the country. I don't want to do that. I don't know who said. I haven't said that I would. But they have done it. I've got attorney generals, DAs. They're all
right.
You take a look at in Atlanta.
You're heavily investigated. Yeah.
They went and met with them. It's all coming out of the Justice Department. They have done something never done in this country before. Now, it's been done in a lot of other countries, third world countries, banana republics, but never done. So when you ask that question, you really have to start by saying, well, they've done it to you. No, I'm not looking to do it to them at all, because that is a really, they have set a very bad precedent, however.
They're the ones doing it. Doing it right now as we speak. That's Trump with Howie Kurtz yesterday morning on Fox News. As I say, he was making the rounds all weekend long. Here's what he said about Joe Scarborough's recent comments, Trump's people are going to come after my producers if he gets into power. This is clip 6.
Let me ask you about Joe Scarborough, because on Bill Maher's show, he said his people, meaning your people, have said they're going to arrest my producers.
Oh, nobody said that. Look, Joe's a sick puppy. I know him well. I used him beautifully. I dropped him because I thought he was very unethical, actually. But I dropped him. But I used him for 2016. And I do it from my apartment. I wouldn't even have to go in. I'd do phone calls. And I did them almost sometimes on a daily basis.
What are you saying?
And then everyone said, because I watch him and what he says about me. What he says is so bad. And you have to understand. Now, I was friendly with him and with Mika. But at a certain point, and it doesn't matter why, but I didn't want to do it anymore with them. And they're not too happy about it. No, but he says a lot of things like that. I think they're unethical, but who knows?
So here again, I think the interesting part of that clip, he says, yeah, I was friends with them. I mean, even after he came down the escalator, MSNBC, early on, people forget this, but Joe Scarborough and Mika, they loved it when Donald Trump would call in. It was a boom time for MSNBC ratings. But you hear them today. We've got one of Mika here in a second. Her head is just exploding at the thought of Donald Trump coming back. But before we get to that, one more from Howie Kurtz's show, because this is where he brings up CBS, he brings up 60 Minutes manipulating that footage or that interview with Kamala, and he gets Trump's react. Trump won't let it go, and he shouldn't. And now you see CBS coming out with the official statement because they're still getting heat from it. Listen to clip 10.
She's spoken out about the unethical editing of the Kamala Harris interview by 60 Minutes.
Terrible.
But you go a step further and you say, yeah, CBS should lose its license. Why?
Sure. Well, I've never seen anything like it. She gave a horrible, incompetent answer on a news program. It's not an entertainment program. They call it news. They say it's a number one news program. And so she gives an answer that shows that she's dumb or incompetent or something wrong with her. It's so bad that the people at CBS say, we're not going to do a little editing, like the word the, make it there, something. You understand? They take the whole ridiculous answer out, and it was a long answer, and replace it with a much shorter answer that she did having to do with a totally different subject, which also didn't make sense.
So even the answer they plugged in didn't really work. This is from Sundance over at Conservative Treehouse. The FCC is investigating CBS for blatant manipulation of news. CBS has no defense. CBS has been caught producing, via editorial manipulation, two entirely different responses to the same question. Joe Biden's FCC is investigating CBS. Who's driving this? Why is the FCC doing this? Because of Donald Trump, who's driving and shaping the narratives. No, I'm not going to let it go. Kamala lied about McDonald's. No, I'm not going to let it go. 60 Minutes lied. 60 Minutes deceitfully edited their video to try to make Kamala look good, to try to prop her up. And then you see the New York Times today. Well, according to Kamala's campaign and one friend, she worked at McDonald's. That's the New York Times, the newspaper of record. Sundance says, everyone has been asking CBS to just simply release the full transcript. Why wouldn't CBS just release the transcript? Problem solved. You can see for yourself. Sundance suggests that there's probably other things that they manipulated as well. There's probably other things that they cut and pasted together. I mean, this is unbelievable. And then Sundance says they'll probably release the transcript, but of course, it'll be after the election because they want to interfere just like they did in 2020. That's what J.D. Vance said when pressed. Yeah, let's talk about election interference. He put it right back on the reporter. We played the clip for you. Do you believe that big tech and social media blotted out the truth about Hunter's laptop? They won't answer it, as we've seen. I mean, to even ask an uncomfortable question is misinformation. You saw Bret Baier. I mean, he is no hardline conservative by any means. Just a few direct questions. She can't answer them. She won't answer them. She gets angry. You know what we're talking about. Bret Baier says, actually, I don't. What are you talking about? She couldn't give an answer. God's exposing them. And we've covered so much of it on this show. It's likely CBS will eventually, well, he says they'll eventually release it. But it'll for sure be after November 5. This is CBS's statement. 60 Minutes gave an excerpt of our interview to Face the Nation that used a longer section of her answer than that on 60 Minutes. Same question, same answer, but a different portion of the response. But as a lot of people are pointing out on social media, just the fact that CBS has to come out with an official statement shows that they're still feeling the heat. And were it not for Donald Trump, I mean, this would have gone away a long time ago. So, as we've said so often with respect to him out there saying 2020 was rigged, everyone in the regime wants him to give that up. They want him to let it go, but he won't because he's got some backbone. He shows some courage. Again, more and more and more, you see Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the one that's driving the news cycle, and he's driving and shaping the narratives. The media know. The corrupt regime media know. They were ready and waiting to make Donald Trump look like a fool at McDonald's. And it turns out yet again to be exactly the opposite. I mean, even the comedy fundraiser last Thursday night, I mean, if you look at the comedian that introduced Donald Trump, he and his wife, I mean, they are some rabid anti-Trumpers. They're never Trump. And yet even the comedian went after the Democrat Party. It's really something to behold what's happening here. As I say, you don't have to go back very far to know that this is a remarkable transformation, what we're seeing. People are no longer afraid to come out in the open and show their support. There's the big Pittsburgh Steelers. I think he's retired now, the big running back. He's out there going to Trump rallies and campaigning for Trump, popular running back, a professional athlete or a former one. There's more and more people like this just coming out of the woodwork. Yeah, I mean, I saw one the other day, a black man, a prominent black man that said, Donald Trump's done, he's done more for the black community than any Democrat. And he's right. He's right. It's like Trump said in one of the previous elections. I forget if it was 2020 or 2016. But look, he said to the black community, what do you have to lose? It's not like the Democrats are helping you. You can see why. More and more African Americans, more and more Latinos. There's, as you saw in that cold open, they're swinging into the Trump camp. I mean, here's this MSNBC reporter down in Arizona. And he's at an early voting station. He's looking for anyone who's voted Kamala. Couldn't find one person. I mean, I know that was in a red county, but still, it's a movement and it's gaining momentum. It's not running out of steam. It's not exhausted. It's on the up and up. This is from Real Clear Politics about the collapse of the Kamala campaign. It says on July 26, in the aftermath of the Democratic Party's ruthless midsummer coup of their one democratically elected presidential nominee, this column predicted that the elevation of Kamala Harris to the party's presidential slot would spectacularly backfire. More specifically, I wrote, practically the path to winning 270 Electoral College votes still runs through the Rust Belt states of Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. It says, it is frankly bizarre for Democrats to swap out the man who talks ceaselessly about his hardscrabble Scranton upbringing for a Californian who boasts the most left-wing voting record of any presidential nominee in modern history. In other words, he's saying they would have been better off with Joe Biden. think of these last few months, I should say, the whirlwind of activities, momentous events. You had the Biden fail at June 27, the assassination attempt on July 13. You had Kamala come in there and replace Biden just 10, 12 days later. And then you've got the debate between Kamala and Trump, and then another assassination attempt. And now, I mean, this guy says, I told you early on, it's going to backfire. How's she going to win over the Rust Belt states? Trump has become not just the populist leader, he's the working man's president. He's the one that actually does something for the black community. It's the message isn't resonating when it's coming from Kamala, as she goes out and laughs and whatever else, and doesn't really answer questions when asked about policy. What are your policies? What are you going to do differently from Joe Biden? Can't answer it. She can't distance herself from Biden enough. She can't get too close. I mean, she's walking a fine line. And as I say, it's just not working. It says here, I'm feeling pretty good these days about the prognosis. This guy is talking about what he said early on, that it's going to backfire. And now look what's happening. I mean, we're actually at a point where there must be even some Democrats saying, maybe Biden would have done better. I mean, you saw in the cold open there, they were at that memorial service and you had Biden talking to Obama. You couldn't hear it. There was no mic on it. But the lip reader says, you know, she's not doing well. Obama's like, yeah, she's not. These people are panicking behind closed doors. And I'm not suggesting that they're going to give up or go away quietly. They've had a history of doing exactly the opposite. There's still 2 weeks left. And then who knows what happens after November 5. But this Real Clear piece says, I'm feeling pretty good about the prognosis. Harris recently campaigned in Erie, Pennsylvania, a crucial regional hub in this election cycle's most important battleground state. Conspicuously absent from the snooze fest was incumbent Senator Bob Casey Jr. He's running for re-election. And some of these Democrat senators in these battleground states, these states that aren't deep, dark blue, they're distancing themselves from Kamala. Casey didn't even show up. How revealing is that? Look, if she's got all the joy, if she's got all the vibes, if she's running away with this, I forget what the publication was saying that this is Kamala's race to lose. It was a left wing rag, of course. It's just wishful thinking. They're dreaming. They're living in fantasy land. If it were real, Casey would be at the rally in Erie, Pennsylvania, alongside Kamala Harris. But he's not, because he knows. He knows if I'm going to win my re-election, I've got to do it on my own. I can't do it with the Democrat machine that settled on Kamala and the regime media that told us that she's the most exciting candidate since Barack Obama in 2008. They lied. They lied, and their lies are being exposed. It says, it's tough to blame Casey. Other vulnerable Senate Democratic incumbents such as Sherrod Brown in Ohio and John Tester in Montana reached the same conclusion a while ago. Such a conclusion makes a great deal of sense. It says a recent Marist National General Election poll, for instance, shows Trump up a whopping 10 points on Harris with registered independents. If that margin ends up being anywhere near accurate, it's extraordinarily difficult to see a scenario in which Trump loses. So again, anything can happen. There's all these stories, too, about cheating in Wisconsin, irregularities in Georgia with the early voting. Raffensperger coming out again saying, you know, if a Democrat wins, I'm not going to fail to certify it. We'll certify it right away. That these people are even still in office in these red states is dumbfounding. So there's going to be cheating, but I think it's going to come down to, or at least it looks like it, 2 weeks out. is it going to be too big to rig or not? And judging by the streets of Philadelphia yesterday, it looks like Trump may be right. We'll see. We'll see. We're not going to make a prediction, but it is pretty pretty fascinating to watch. I mentioned how the radical left, they're never ones to take this lying down or to go away quietly. This was from Peggy Noonan. She's a rhino. She's a never Trumper, and she's writing in her column last week, or giving some advice to Harris, saying if this is a close election and Mr. Trump loses, he will likely reject the outcome. He won't accept a result he doesn't like. It's amazing to me how these people never call out the Democrats, these rhinos, for rejecting the outcome of an election. They do it all the time. They do it all the time when there isn't cheating. And when there actually was cheating, here comes Peggy Noonan, rushing. She wrote speeches for Ronald Reagan, of all things. But here she is rushing to the defense of Joe Obama, rushing to the defense of Chris Krebs, rushing to the defense of Stacey Abrams or Clyburn. So predictable. Says Ms. Harris should be describing, well, let me just back up. Trump will reject the results. He will likely push against democracy's peaceful processes because he is angry and resentful and his feelings are hurt. Listen to this meltdown from Mika over with Morning Joe, clip 14.
But there are efforts to sidestep, dance around things that he's saying that are clear fascism. Kamala Harris showed righteous anger after Bret Baier lied to his viewers by showing a clip that hid Donald Trump's most dangerous comments on the campaign trail. I'm calling it a lie now because this wasn't a live interview and he wasn't caught off guard. There's no excuse. 24 hours after Fox News ran on a loop, Harris's reaction to that misleading clip that millions of Americans were misled by. Their choice was not to apologize to the viewers right away, but instead to show her reaction. Just the VO. See, just that's called voiceover. Not her voice, not what she's saying, not what happened there, but this. And they show it out of context. And continue over this video to berate, mischaracterize, and diminish her as an angry black woman. The American people were misled about one of the most important issues of this campaign, that there is a former president who wants to be president again, threatening to use the military and the National Guard against his political opponents. These acts that he's talking about are not only unconstitutional, this is called fascism.
And those are the words of someone who knows the Trump movement is an unstoppable force. You can hear it in their voice. They're in meltdown mode constantly. Peggy Noonan is as well. She says that Trump's the one who's angry, resentful, and whose feelings are hurt. Look at what you just saw there. She goes on to give advice to Kamala. On January 6th, the Capitol was seized by an armed, angry crowd. They were armed, says Peggy Noonan. She's right there with Karl Rove. It was an armed insurrection. They lie. Even the Republicans do. The rhinos, certainly. I was in my hotel room. I forget which morning it was, but I turned on MSNBC. I think it was 6:39 in the morning because I was going to go make some coffee. I said to myself, I'll see what MSNBC. Within 30 seconds of just randomly turning on MSNBC, I heard January 6th. There you go. And then for the next 2 minutes that I watched it, they talked about Donald Trump being senile. So there you go. It's a wonder that these people aren't bored stiff with the same talking points every day. Peggy Noonan says that it was an armed insurrection. What were they armed with? If they were trying to overthrow the government, couldn't one of them at least have brought a firearm? No one did. Because they were peacefully protesting. And Noonan won't talk about all of the federal agents that were embedded into the crowd. So many of them that, well, Chris Wray, he just can't reveal sources and methods. All of these people being exposed. Look at the Babylon Bee just mocking them. The January 6th, the deadliest day. How many died then? There was one sit down. I think it was Dennis Prager. And again, Babylon Bee satire. They're making fun of it. But they're sitting with Dennis Prager saying, do you know of any other moment in American history where more people died than on January 6th? And Prager says, well, it happens like every weekend in Chicago. It's just ridiculous, these people. Again, more and more, though, you're seeing Donald Trump. He's shaping the news cycle by going to McDonald's, by calling out CBS, by coming back to it over and again. And he's establishing narratives, narratives that people in America believe. They don't trust the regime media. They don't trust the news. This is Peggy Noonan again. On January 6th, the Capitol was seized by an armed and angry crowd to stop a constitutionally mandated action. The president sat in his office and watched. Did he like what he saw? Here she is. Just what was going through his mind? They divine, don't they? They divine a motive. Oh yeah, he liked what he saw. It says here, that Constitution has kept us together for nearly 250 years through thick and thin. He didn't move quickly to protest it that day. And if he doesn't accept the November 5 outcome, he will be failing to be protective again. Listen to this. If Ms. Harris thinks Mr. Trump is a danger to the Constitution, then this is more than an election. It's a national emergency. What is she getting at? What does she mean by this? She's giving advice not to Donald Trump, to Kamala Harris. What if these radical leftist Marxist radicals, what if they lose in a close election? How would they respond? How would they react? She doesn't even address it. She just says if Kamala Harris thinks Trump is a danger, then we're talking about a national emergency here. Wow. It says, in an emergency, you put your own ideological purity and pride aside. So it's a little vague and cryptic, I suppose. But at the same time, these are dangerous people. Willing to do, as we've seen with the regime, they are willing to do anything to stay in power. Couple of emails, maybe one to finish with today. It says here, by editing its interview with Kamala Harris on 60 Minutes last week so as to make her sound more lucid and less conceptually adrift than she is on most subjects that affect the American people, CBS demonstrated how it has abandoned journalism in favor of biased activism in pursuit of the extreme left-wing agenda. It says one would have to have been on an extended vacation from the truth not to have noticed this years ago. I mean, this is just the final silly stages of a complete and total surrender to fantasy, to lies and deception, to Revelation 12 in verse 9. It says here, CBS and its left-wing collaborators in the mainstream media have placed the American people in the unenviable position of no longer being able to trust the umpire. It says, during the mid-1930s, Stanley Baldwin, Britain's prime minister, once remarked that the press seek power, but power without responsibility, which, he said, is the prerogative of the harlot. A little bit of history there. All of it tying right back in with what Donald Trump has called out with respect to 60 Minutes, and really, more broadly, the regime media. If you'd like to email the show with some feedback, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. rumble.com. If you go to the Rumble channel, rumble.com/trumpetdaily, make sure that you give us the thumbs up and that you leave us a nice comment below. That's all we have time for on today's show from Auburn, New York. We appreciate you joining us for this on-location production. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll see you again tomorrow.